Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema d'Amore. I'm one of your hosts, James Reinhart.
Chuck Phillips.
I'm your third host, Justin Morgan.
And today we start our theme of hidden gems. And I kick it off with a HBO TV movie from the 90s called Cast a Deadly Spell.
That he does. Hidden Gems is a rough name for the theme of just something kind of like off the wall that's extremely enjoyable. That could be the name of our theme, off the wall but extremely enjoyable.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Hidden Gems sums it up pretty well, I think.
Yeah, not like a huge, like super popular movie, you know, something you probably never heard of, have to go searching around to find. I certainly had never heard of this movie.
Yeah, I had not heard of it either. Then there was like some blog post or something. I stumbled across it, and you know, I was reading about it, and I'm like, this sounds really interesting. Can't believe I haven't heard of it. It sounds right up my alley too. When we did Film Noir a while back, this was one of the movies that I was considering doing. Because I was like, when else am I gonna get a chance to talk about this movie? And I was between this, Angel Heart and Blade Runner, and ultimately went with Angel Heart. But I was like, in the back of my head, I'm like, shit, I don't know if we're going to get a chance to discuss Cast a Deadly Spell again. But we did. And as soon as Justin came up with this theme idea, I jumped at the chance to discuss this movie.
You always have your free-for-alls, even though it's been, what, like a year and a half since we've had a free-for-all. They should become regular again at some point. Maybe January, or I don't know. Wait, no. It would be February-ish.
I don't know.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, it should be February.
Because January is Chuck's picks.
Yeah.
Part of me thought, like, as a joke for this theme is, like, every week I'd come back to you guys, and I'm like, okay, so here's a movie that not many people know about, Fight Club. And every week I'd just come back with, like, a different movie that everyone knows, but I'm like, oh, it's a hidden gem. Not many people talk about it.
Donnie Darko, you're like that guy that's like, I don't know if you've seen this movie, Boondock Saints.
Yeah, yeah.
To be 100% honest with you, I bet you if you listen to another podcast, cult hidden gems, cult classics and stuff, I bet you somebody would be bringing up Donnie Darko. Like, hey, have you guys ever even heard of Donnie Darko?
It is weird because there was like a couple years where like everyone was talking about Donnie Darko, and now nobody really does.
That's because they saw The Box and Southland Tales.
Southland Tales is a masterpiece.
I haven't seen that. I saw The Box, too, and The Box
Southland Tales is not awful. The only thing that I don't like about Southland Tales is it's supposed to be like
the second half.
Yeah, it's the second half of a story. The first half is a book, and I'm pretty sure they released the book like way after the movie. it's goofy. There's a lot of things in it that I do enjoy in that movie, but it's so insane. I think it's Richard Kelly just trying to experiment and maybe failing, but at least he tried.
Yeah. Well, it's like The Box. That short story is like 20 pages or something, and they turned it into this weird, convoluted movie.
Yeah, that's Richard Kelly convoluted.
Yeah.
Well, that's like the Donnie Darko is a perfect example. The director's cut came out, and the director's cut was like trying to explain things, but there would be like paragraphs written that you only had like 2 seconds to read. I don't know. I do enjoy Donnie Darko. I would like to revisit it at some point. Do I hold it dear to me? Probably not. I don't really know what cult classics like in high school that I watched that still are very important to me today. I mean, it's really funny too, because Chuck brought up Boondock Saints also. There was that sequel S, and then, or sorry, S is the Donnie Darko one. And then there's Boondock Saints 2, and they're so terrible. Like, they are the worst things I've ever seen. Which makes me feel like maybe they struck, you know, gold by accident. on the first time around.
One of those things where they got lucky.
Who knows? But today is also Election Day, the day that we're recording this. And it'll probably still be Election Day, technically, when you're listening to this.
Yeah.
I'm wearing my Joe Biden shirt today.
Just going to hang out like those guys that watch the football game. They don't go anywhere to show their support, but they'll just sit at home knowing that you support them.
Yeah, I'm wearing sweatpants and a Joe Biden Kamala Harris shirt.
I mailed in my vote, so, you know.
I mailed in my vote today, too. I work today, and they canceled our morning meeting so we could vote and told us nicely, like, if something happens and you're stuck in lines, like, don't worry. Voting is more important. Go out and vote. So I told my boss, I'm like, I plan to be voting all day tomorrow. And they're like, long lines. I'm like, nope, I just got to go to a lot of different places to vote. I'm joking about fraud. And they're like, Justin, you are confusing us. To this, yeah.
Like, Drake, you hear that?
Well, in all honesty, like, yeah, today is a super important day, at least to me. And even like my grandparents are no longer with me. I didn't vote for them, by the way. Mm-hmm. They would have voted for Biden, too. So I had to get out there. Well, get out there. I was an early bird. I was like one of the first people to get my ballot and send it in. And it's hopefully, I don't know. I'm going to be optimistic at this point. Who knows if I'm really optimistic when you're listening to the recording of this, but I'm going to be optimistic for the rest of the day.
Yeah. I'm going to be a nervous wreck. So
I am too, James, but I'm trying to be positive about it.
Well, that's good.
I'm trying not to admit what I really am. Mm-hmm. This is our first morning recording in a while, too.
Yeah, it is, thanks to me and my new schedule.
Is this going to be normal?
No, after this week it should be. This is, I'm working, I got called back to casino, so I'm working that and at the scare house like every day. And I'm on a different shift to casino, so I'm 3 to 11 now. So,
well, with James's experiment, he was saying about how he was going to keep bringing up well-known movies like he didn't know what they were. I had the dumb idea of maybe watching my pick every single day this month. Like, just continuously watch it every day. And I'm like, well, I don't want to hate the movie, so maybe let's not. I don't know. I thought about it like, that's a good idea. And then a couple seconds later, I thought, no, that's just terrible. Torture.
Yeah, that's
why are you doing to that yourself? Maybe once a week. That'd be kind of cool. I'd probably still hate it. But I would love to be quoting it and be like, Justin, what are you quoting? I'm like, this is a kind of obscure movie, okay? But, okay, Cast a Deadly Spell, HBO. You can watch it on HBO Max. It's from, like, 1991. James?
Yeah?
Why don't you tell us what it's about?
So it's as we said, it's an HBO TV movie from 91, directed by Martin Campbell, who would go on to do GoldenEye, Casino Royale, Mask of Zorro, and then the Green Lantern movie. But, you know, we won't talk about that one.
You want me to edit that out?
No, you can keep that in. And then, starring Fred Ward of Tremors fame, Julianne Moore, Clancy Brown. And it's, you know, like, the plot really intrigued me. It is right up my alley. It's takes place in an alternate version of 1940s Los Angeles, where magic exists. Everyone is a magic user. Seemingly every mythology is existing in flux at the same time. And our main character is a PI named H.P. Lovecraft, who does not use magic. And he is contacted by a client to track down the book, The Necronomicon, which was stolen. Because his client needs the book for a conference at midnight. And, you know, obviously hijinks ensue. It's a very twisty-turny noir plot with magic and monsters and Lovecraftian elements.
It made me laugh a little bit because when he said his name was H.P. Detective H.P. Lovecraft, I'm like, oh, my God. I swear you tweeted something, like, the other day about, what was it, like, horror movies being written in like the early 2000s, and their names were like Detective John Carpenter and Dr. Wes Craven. And I was like, that's exactly what that is, because there was like Ray Bradbury was like the
Detective Bradbury. Yeah,
that was in Final Destination, like Billy Hitchcock. So yeah, I think the one of the teachers' names is Carpenter. That's like everybody in that first one all has horror names.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we just like, yeah, yeah. they did it a little bit more subtly, like, in the 90s, and then in the early 2000s, they didn't care. Well, that's, like, take Scream, like, Loomis, like, they're just, that's Halloween, and Jarvis is Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Taken from, I guess, Peeping Tom, that we were talking about last week. But, yeah, they used to be subtle references, now they're like, fuck it, H.P. Lovecraft, Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with this, at the time it came out, like, you know, you had to kind of be, you know, sort of deep into horror and, you know, sci-fi literature to at least get, you know, be familiar with Lovecraft and his works. You know, he's gotten more popular, especially over the last few years. But I feel like when this came out, Lovecraftian media was still, it still wasn't quite a thing.
You think early 90s, like, no, nobody, not a lot of fans?
I think he did, but it wasn't as, like, widespread as it is today. You know, I think with the internet, you know, Lovecraft's definitely caught on a little bit more.
Internet almost existed then.
Almost.
Almost.
I think that's probably, like, where it, like, first started, because that's when you would have had, like, a lot of the guys really hyping it up. I mean, Stephen King and Clive Barker were already established, but I think that's probably when they were being, you know, they were getting really big and probably being interviewed and being asked, hey, who's like a big influence in your career? And then they started talking about it more and bringing up H.P. Lovecraft as like one of the original horror writers.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say like, cause you know, I mean, if you go back and watch like lots of, you know, all the way back to the 30s, there's Lovecraftian movies and Lovecraftian references. But, you know, I don't feel like any of them were really as, like, I'd say reverent or openly embracing Lovecraft like this movie was. But, yeah, I'd agree with Chuck that by this time, you know, horror writers like King and Barker were kind of citing Lovecraft as an inspiration, and, you know, his name was really getting out there.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I have not read any yet. I have like the complete collections because it's free, public domain or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to, what was it? The Color of Space. What the fuck's that called?
The Color of Space.
Yeah, I bought the movie. Moved my shit to Boston. So I was like, oh shit, because I got it right beforehand. And I thought, oh, I'll read the short story first. And I haven't. I trust it's good. My idea of Lovecraftian without reading anything is like, there's like darker things going on below the surface. Like there's I don't want to say like demonic worlds or something. Everyone's trying to bring basically the equivalent of Satan to the real world.
Sort of. It's not quite like satanic. It's more of just like, you know, these ancient beings that used to. They used to, you know, run things, but now they don't.
You should have Justin Explains Lovecraft without ever reading Lovecraft.
I should, yeah. but I would say that the Color Out of Space adaptation that came out earlier this year is probably one of the most faithful Lovecraftian adaptations that I've seen.
Nice.
To the point where, like, it lifts narration directly from the book.
Well, I really liked Mandy, so I'm really excited to watch it. I know. I'm really excited to watch it. I've had it for a year. Did you watch it yet? No. Isn't his next movie too? I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. Isn't his next movie also Lovecraft?
Yeah, he's planned a trilogy of Lovecraft films, and I think his next one is The Dunwich Horror, and he hasn't said what the third one will be.
He'll be the Lovecraft guy.
Yeah, but he says a trilogy, and they all take place in the same universe, like Lovecraft stories. I guess if you guys want to hear me chat more about Lovecraft, pop over to our friend Nick's podcast, because him and I do a big Lovecraft episode. But Lovecraft one of his big things of his stories is that they all took place within the same universe. It's kind of like the first shared universe in a way. They all took place in the same canon. They all referenced each other. Certain monsters and deities, they would reoccur and pop up in different stories.
I thought you were going to say the one thing about H.P. Lovecraft stories is they're all super racist.
They are also super racist.
They're kind of vaguely.
There was a tad racism in this movie too, but
just slightly, you know.
Yeah. Once again, if you pop over to our to Nick's podcast, we get
no. Explain it now.
But yeah, Lovecraft is pretty racist.
Nick's podcast, a geeky nerd podcast, mm-hmm. or is it nerdy geek?
Geeky nerd podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Check it out. I haven't, mainly because I wanted to read some stuff first, and I'm a procrastinator. Oh, but fine. Nick can hold a really good conversation, and you know James can too, so I'm sure it would be very interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, so Lovecraft, he had problems with basically anyone who wasn't a white male. But yeah, we can go. That's more for next podcast, but this... the Lovecraft in this film is nothing like the real life Lovecraft. Pretty sure because the real life Lovecraft was afraid to leave his house and interact with people. And this character is a tough talking PI who does lots of fighting and pushing people around and stuff in his quest for the Necronomicon.
Well, when I saw Fred Ward, and I was like, this has to be right off of Tremors, and it was. It's like the year after Tremors. Like, they saw Tremors, and they're like, fuck, this guy has to be in their movie. Because I don't really think of him in much of anything else besides Tremors. He pops up every once in a while here and there, and he doesn't even really, his, like, what's his best movie, Tremors 2? Where Kevin Bacon's gone and he gets to be the star.
Yeah, I guess. I know, because they did that Tremors TV pilot that didn't get picked up, and he was rumored to be returning for that to reprise his role.
I've heard it was great. I know people that worked on it, and I'm really disappointed that it never got to take off.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are bummed. There's like...
They said the pilot's good, too. Like, just fucking release the pilot. We're okay that we know that we don't have the whole show.
I mean,
no, we're not okay, but give it to us.
How many fucking Tremors movies are there now? I just saw like a new
7.
One. Jesus Christ.
I have the complete collection from a few years ago. It's 4. I didn't even watch the fourth one. It's like a prequel.
Yeah,
I've only watched the first 3. I never watched anymore.
It's in the Old West. I saw part of it and I was like, oh, this is pretty terrible.
Like the first two, I do like the second one. I mean, I haven't watched it in a while, so maybe my opinion will change. But I remember the third one was so weak, and I'm like, they fly now. And I'm like, are they just going to do this for every single one? Like, they're just going to change it into something else?
And the answer is yes.
Yeah, and it seemed very weak, too. They're like, they can walk. I guess they can fly in the next one.
my favorite thing was when you mentioned that Burt Gum is just every redneck's, like, wet dream. Like, he gets busted into, like... his room full of guns. Like, he's like, finally, I knew this would come in handy one day to collect like thousands of firearms.
Yeah. Tremors was on TV like, I don't know, a month ago. And I just watched the whole thing, and maybe it's been a couple of years since I saw it. And yeah, Bert, I'm like, this is every redneck's wet dream. He has this arsenal of guns and he's going to save the town. And he's got his, like, was it Reba McEntire's wife or something?
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, he's going to save the day. And I think he's, I don't know. I'm pretty sure I've seen him on the cover of, like, the newest one.
Yeah,
he's but I feel like yeah. he doesn't die. He is literally the American hero in all the movies.
It's weird.
Like, he went from crazy guy to the hero.
It's weird to see that actor in other things, because in How I Met Your Mother, he plays Ted's dad. And I'm just like, oh, it's Burt Gummer playing like a normal guy and not this gun-toting redneck character.
Is he real subdued in that?
Yeah, he's real subdued. He's just playing like, you know, like a normal
dad.
Normal dad, you know. And I've seen him pop up in other stuff where he's playing like more of a subdued. Like, you realize like he's a really good actor, which is probably why he keeps getting, you know, brought back for this role.
he probably takes up these tremor roles because they're fun. They're probably fun to do.
Yeah, probably. And, you know, it's a paycheck. And he gets to be like, he's basically the star of the franchise now.
Now, this movie, made for TV, going back to Cast a Deadly Spell, made for TV. I saw that there was a sequel, but I couldn't watch the sequel anywhere. I mean, I think it was on YouTube.
Yeah, I researched the sequel a bit after I first saw this. And I guess the sequel is generally considered to be pretty terrible. Most of the every role has basically been recast. Dennis Hopper plays the Lovecraft role.
Yeah.
And it takes place in the 50s. And it's I guess it's
well, it's like Paul Schrader directed it too. It's like it's so strange. It's such a strange idea. I'm thinking because before you hopped on the podcast, me and Chuck were talking about like why didn't they include that too on HBO Max? And the only thing I could think of is the quality probably wasn't up to par, and they didn't want to put it on their service.
That's what I'm guessing. My thing is like with this, I really love this concept. And you kept hearing like after Game of Thrones ended that HBO was looking for something new to kind of like take up the Game of Thrones, like fill that geek void. And they have Lovecraft Country. They have your Watchmen, but I'm just like, you know, they have Cast a Deadly Spell like right there. Like, why don't they just turn that into a TV show?
Maybe Witch Hunt, got rid of that, like killed that idea.
Maybe. but yeah, I watched this in 2016. And it really reminded me of, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this book series, The Dresden Files, which is about a wizard PI who, you know, fights all sorts of supernatural nastiness. So it really reminded me of those, and those didn't start coming out until I think the late 90s, early 2000s.
I'm only familiar with you bringing it up before. I haven't read them.
And then, it also really reminded me. And then a few years later, that shitty movie Bright really reminded me of this, except I thought this was way better.
I was thinking Bright, I never watched, and then like I was having very hard like Onward thoughts.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
Disney Pixar Onward.
Yeah.
Like, I kept thinking of that. Especially when there was like the unicorn that he almost hit in his car reminded me of the unicorns that were like eating out of the trash in the Pixar movie.
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, I could totally see it, like a modern day it's fantasy. Good.
And it's on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I heard that.
So it's rivaling HBO Max.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
That's one of the to get into some of the details of the film. I think that was one of the things I would say is a problem or I didn't like was that I don't think they go enough into the magic, like not just slightly. Cause it's like, it's not explained like his magic just always existed in this universe or did some event happen that made everyone start using magic? Cause a lot of them almost seem to make it out like magic's a somewhat recent thing, at least the way that I heard them describing it. Like, don't you know, everyone's using magic. It's the new thing. And I'm like, okay, it's the new thing. But then they have like werewolves and vampires and it also rains blood every once in a while. Like it's a lot of haziness that I couldn't quite get as to how they were placing magic and like mythological creatures into this universe of 1940s LA.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too, because this is the only second time I've watched it, but I thought that too. I'm like, they talk like I had the same thought. I'm like, they talk about magic as if it's a recent development in this world. It seemed to me almost like cell phones where it's like, oh, everyone's got a cell phone these days, you know, like that's how they seem to talk about it. And then, you know, Lovecraft's the exception because he doesn't use magic.
Well, some of my favorite stuff was like the effects that they did in this movie. They had like little nods to magic every once in a while, like a bartender pouring his glass and he lets go of it. And I think there were like trays serving people with no one holding them. But I really kind of dug the random murder by that little guy. I don't know his character name. But when he killed that guy in the bathroom with
oh, yeah.
paper,
yeah.
I was the like, paper cuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually really kind of cool. I loved him, like, magic's outlawed, and he comes in like a little badass, and he gets, I think he gets water in his hand, and he turns it into gasoline or something, and he like burns the guy out of the bathroom stall, and the guy's like begging to leave, and he's like, I'll give you all the money that I stole, and then ends up just being like newspaper clippings and stuff. It's not even money anymore because he changed that. And
I took that never was money.
Oh, never was at all?
No, he was double-crossing him.
I was taking it as magic. But yeah, you're probably right.
Not everything's magic, Justin.
I know, but it's magic's new. I thought it was magic. But I thought the effects were really cool. Like, they started off really simple, like somebody probably just blowing a leaf blower on him or something. And then it was, like, swirling around the guy. And he was getting cut up. I'm like, this is cool. This is like Hellraiser or something. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm watching. And I like the blood splatter on that guy too, after he was all on the little guy before he was all cut up. Cause I was half expecting, he has this big zombie guy with him, like his henchman, which is like the one kind of like very racist thing in this movie. I think he's like the only black character, and he's a slave. I thought he was gonna go get that guy, but no, he's like, fuck it, I've got magic too, I'm gonna take care of him. It did a really good job of playing against my expectations in that moment, because I don't know what I was the zombie guy is scary. Like, he legit looks, he reminds me of the zombie from Plan 9 from Outer Space.
I guess.
Like, he looks just like the exact same zombie to me. And but he was very intimidating, and I was like, oh, he's gonna go get that guy, and he didn't. But yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it is funny with the way they use zombies, which again also seems like kind of a recent thing, I guess, where everything kind of seems new. Like, we know voodoo, I guess, is a thing from his H.P. Lovecraft's Landlord. Seems to be some sort of voodoo priestess who also is a landlady and also has a dance studio, which did lead to some of my favorite. Like, I knew it was going to be the joke every time, but it did make me laugh every time when he's like, here's my card. Everyone's always like, I don't take dance lessons. And he's like, it's not my card.
Yeah.
Like, every time I knew that joke was coming, but it still kind of made me chuckle when he would do that. But yeah, the zombie henchmen, and then the zombies building the houses that are just in the background. You're not even watching, really, but it's almost hard to focus on the scene of Fred Ward talking to that woman when the zombies are just in the background falling off of the roof, like sawing things in half that are breaking, like falling into a hole.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite little things about this movie is, like, magic seems like such a part of normal life, and there's always like something happening in the background or something happening, you know, in a scene to make it interesting. Like a scene where he goes to talk to that one dude and he has like gremlins in his car.
Yeah. Oh, I love the gremlins in the car. Yeah, I love that.
The only thing that they brought back for the war is these goddamn gremlins. Yeah, it's a really fun sequence.
And of course, there were legitimate gremlins in that guy's car. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was them, but from that point on, all I could think of was Gremlins 2. They kind of look similar, but then there's that one like creature that with the wings, and that really made me think of the Bat Gremlin from 2.
Oh, the gargoyle.
Yeah, the gargoyle reminded me of he becomes a gargoyle. Maybe that's why. In Gremlins 2, they had the bright idea to just like there's a really great Key and Peele sketch where they're planning Gremlins 2, and it's probably the most accurate thing I've ever seen, where they're like, everyone gets to pick their own gremlin, let's go. And I was like, my gremlin's gonna be vegetables. They're like, it's in the movie, cool. There's a bat one, and he ends up getting covered in cement, and he becomes a gargoyle. Mm-hmm. He like dries out really fast and becomes a gargoyle. And I thought like he looked identical to that, so I don't know if they like somehow took that creature and like adjusted it to make it look slightly different, but
yeah, maybe they took inspiration.
But I start Googling it now. I'm like, the gremlin from Cast a Deadly Spell. Oh, the gargoyle. But yeah, the effects were great, and I don't know. That's. I'll let you go, James. You were gonna say something.
I was just saying. I really like how naturalistic the world feels, you know, and how magic, you know, pops in and out. And the effects are pretty fun, like practical effects from the day. You know, probably not great from today's standards, but they're still, you know, they're still nice to look at. And it did seem a little bit more thought out, this world, than like say Bright, where Bright was just like, it's the modern world, but there are orcs occasionally and stuff like that. Where this seemed like, you know, magic, everything I thought felt very organic in this world, as far as how the magic fit in and how people used it and how everyone sort of interacted with the magical world. And that really just kind of helps sort of like, you know, it sort of seasons this film noir plot that we've seen before, where it's basically just a detective chasing down, you know, a stolen MacGuffin and coming across a whole bunch of other characters who also want this thing, you know, and it's kind of got all the tropes you've come to expect from film noir, where there's the, you know, the femme fatale who's, you know, you don't know where her loyalties lie. There's like the mob boss who's also like the detective's ex-partner. You know, there's a client who clearly has an agenda of his own. So you got all these familiar tropes, but kind of put in through a fresh perspective and this really fun sort of horror fantasy kind of filter.
Yeah, I agree with kind of the way you bring it up about how the magic feels natural. I would say it feels natural in the sense that, of course, people would just waste it on mundane things. Mm-hmm. I guess it seems to be the most common thing of you don't understand, magic's the way of the future. And it's like half the time when you see people using magic, it's the guy makes flames to light his cigarettes or something instead of owning a lighter. It's like everyone's using it for the most mundane things imaginable. No one seems to think that maybe they could like use the magic to become like a super villain or something like that, or actually be like a productive member of society. They just do dumb stuff with it.
I have to find it and I'll send it to you guys. Maybe I can post it on like our Facebook page. But there was somebody that posted this thing on Twitter. It's like this villain that uses, he's like in the magic tricks, and he like lights his cigarette by like the same thing, like a flame on his finger. But then he uses magic to have a knife to kill this person. And that's like, I want to watch this movie where this villain's entire identity is they use magic like in murderous ways. Sorry. Sidetrack. Okay. Sidetrack.
I mean, the only person in this world seems to want to use magic for, you know, villainous. Well, Clancy Brown's character, obviously, but, also David Warner's character, who him ended up being evil, wanting to use the Necronomicon to bring about the end of the world, was probably the most obvious twist, because David Warner is a creepy dude. And, you know, obviously anyone who wants the Necronomicon wants it for nefarious purposes.
That guy was so familiar to me, and I was like, I can't place him. It was Titanic that I know him from.
Oh, shit, I've seen him. He's been in, like, fucking everything. You know,
I was about to say, I always think of The Omen.
The Omen.
He's in that.
Oh.
Ninja Turtles 2.
Yeah. He's the doctor.
I'm afraid to watch Ninja Turtles 2.
I mean, it's not good, but, you know.
I loved Ninja Turtles 2 as a kid, and I've watched enough movies that ended up being terrible. Well, I did watch. No, that is the one I watched.
Yeah,
it was terrible.
It, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is the reason I don't.
You brought
that's
it up
multiple
times. You don't watch the first one because you're scared of that one being ruined for you.
The first one's still good. First one still holds up really well. Second, third.
I like the TMNT animated thing from like 2007.
Yeah, I like that.
I never liked 3. Even as a kid, it was dumb. But I thought 2 was cool as a kid, and I watched it again. I'm like, no. I had a teacher in. Taekwondo, he worked on that movie, Ninja Turtles 2. He trained Donatello and the pizza guy how to fight. And I was like, awesome.
That's great.
He also got kicked out because he was like, I don't know, having an affair with a child or something.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. It took a dark turn.
Yeah.
There's a similar turn in this movie, I guess. Which I guess we'll get to when we get to the end.
I mean, we can just get to, that was one thing, you know, I guess since you brought it up, when rewatch it this time, I'm like, why do I not remember this weird this weird aspect of this movie?
Yeah, the statutory rape saves the day.
Yeah, it's, that was something, because you know, David Warner,
it's not funny. It's not funny in the, in, you know, real world context. In the movie, the statement, that's what's funny.
Yeah, the movie with the 16-year-old character is really weird. And like, it's, the whole time I was watching it this time, I'm like, holy shit, how did I forget this? I guess, yeah, for those of you listening, David Warner's character, he has a stepdaughter that's 16, and he talks about how he's trying to protect her virtue. And this film sexualizes the fuck out of the 16-year-old character. And she seemingly wants to fuck, like, everything. you know, obviously, if you're – it's not really a Lovecraftian thing, but I feel like if you've seen movies, you know what's going on is that David Warner wants to keep this girl a virgin so he can sacrifice her to the old ones and bring about, you know, the Lovecraftian old ones, Cthulhu and all that. And it seems like he succeeds at the end, but you find out that she slept with the one cop that Lovecraft asked to keep an eye on her. So David Warner's plan fails and he gets eaten by a Lovecraftian monstrosity. But yeah,
that's cool too.
I mean, the Lovecraftian thing is cool. It's really, you know, really cool seeing this old one pop up. But yeah, like at the end where the one cop's like, and her are like, oh yeah, we slept together. And Lovecraft's like overjoyed. He's like, oh, you saved the world.
It's like a joke punchline. It is. And then like a second punchline is like, he's married.
Yeah,
and
she has that. I like that he's like, because isn't there something where the cop's like, oh, am I going to jail or something? And they're like, no, you saved the world. And the girl's like, wait, you're married? And it's weird. And I'm like, oh God, this is
it's problematic for sure. Like, mm-hmm. I also thought it was a little bit whenever he punched like that
the trans character.
The transgender in the face. Like, brutally punched him. I'm like, wow,
Her.
Well, at first I don't know. I thought it was a her and to begin, and I was like, wow, he hates women. Yeah, and then it was like
the trans character, it's like, oh cool, they're doing a trans character in the 90s. That's forward thinking. But yeah, Lovecraft like brutally assaults this trans character and then keeps misgendering her and calling her by her dead name. And I'm like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, in the 90s they probably didn't really give much thought to misgendering or dead naming, but I'm now watching it now, I'm like, oof, fuck, man. This is which that's probably the one similarity between this Lovecraft and real Lovecraft, is real Lovecraft probably would hate trans people and would refer to them by their, you know, their dead names and misgendering them. But yeah, so there are definitely some aspects of this movie that haven't aged well. And that and the voodoo zombie racism.
And the statutory rape.
I loved the statutory rape in with the transphobia. I'm sorry, I should have been more specific. But yeah, the statutory rape, the transphobia, and the voodoo zombie.
Where was HBO Max's warning, like on Gone with the Wind? I wasn't prepared for what I was going into. I need to be adequately told that they're sensitive material.
Yeah, I think they I feel like with this, they're probably like, yeah, not enough people have seen this.
100%. They're like, yeah, no one's going to watch this.
Yeah.
It's not racist, it's a zombie.
I mean, it is one of those things where you kind of do have to look at it, you know, I feel like it's healthy to view older stuff like this from today's standards, but also, you know, you do have to kind of look at it in context of the times, and be like, okay, you know, this is,
what is, like 1948 or something?
Yeah, it takes place in 1948. It was made in the 90s. So yeah, it's obviously not going to be 100% ideologically pure, but I feel like, you know, there's nothing wrong with kind of keeping those modern attitudes in the back of your mind. Even though, like, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, sleeping with 16-year-olds was okay in the 90s. I feel like that was always kind of frowned upon, but what do I know?
James, you could have easily saved your ass by just saying, I thought that these themes are interesting to talk about for how wrong they are. And you're just like, I forgot about that. Yeah, it's interesting to, I feel like Chuck was joking a little bit, but I am kind of surprised that they didn't have some sort of warning when, like Disney Plus, everything you watch on there is like a trigger warning. Mm-hmm. Like you got to watch, like I went to go watch Fantasia and it's like, just so you know, it's a little racist, but
yeah,
but enjoy.
Well, it's, you know, yeah, like I said, it's just old stuff. You kind of have to approach it with that.
Well, going back to the finale, I thought the monster looked great. I like the effects of it eating the Warner.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of a vague Lovecraftian monstrosity. I know whenever he does his incantation to summon it, he kind of like name drops pretty much every deity from Lovecraftian's pantheon. So I wouldn't call it Cthulhu or Yog-Sothoth, but it's, you know, basically what every monster Lovecraft describes, where it's, you know, tentacly and kind of slimy.
Fred.
Or it's Fred, you know. We just call it Fred. But yeah, he summons it in the middle of this abandoned housing project, and it, not abandoned, it's a under construction housing project, but because his stepdaughter is no longer a virgin, David Warner gets eaten. It's a lot like Raiders of the Lost Ark, the ending in that way, where the main character isn't really active. He's just more or less just a witness to what's happening.
The virgin thing's always like really big in, I don't know, I'm thinking like Monster Squad. It was a big part of that plot.
Mm-hmm.
And like rewatching Hocus Pocus, like that's all, they're obsessed with virgins in that movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was one time I watched it last year for like a couple minutes on ABC Family, and it had a virgin counter. Every time someone said virgin, they counted it. I'm like, well, this is a little weird for ABC Family. Weird. Not that they say it, but I feel like there's going to be some kid being like, Mom, what's a virgin?
I remember when,
and then their parent has to lie to them.
I remember, yeah, whatever. My brothers and I, when we first saw Hocus Pocus, we were like, what's a virgin? And, you know, my mom was obviously not prepared for that question.
She's like, damn you, Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, she gave us like the most bullshit parental answer ever. She's like, oh, it means that they've never been kissed before.
And you watched them get kissed in the movie probably prior to that.
Yeah, and obviously as we got older, I'm like, oh.
Well, he's not a virgin because his dad kissed him.
Well, yeah, that was my mom's bullshit, you know. Avoiding the hard.
I'm not a virgin anymore because of my dad.
Avoiding the hard answer. Yeah.
Misinformation is not always the best thing to give to your kid.
No, it is not. I always, you know, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I always feel like you should advocate, you know, talking to your kid like an adult.
Mm-hmm. I had a great, I think it was like sixth grade. My one teacher used the word pootie tang and he summed it up as like pudding. When he like slipped, and I remember like I think it was like a Thanksgiving dinner or something, and I said I wanted to eat some booty tang, and I just remember like everyone laughing, and they're like, what do you want to eat? I'm like, I want some booty tang, and they're like, do you know what it means? I'm like, yeah, it's like pudding. Oh, fond memories.
Booty tang, memories of booty tang. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's one of those things, like, the virgin sacrifice is such a trope, but Lovecraft never really used that in his stories. That, you know, it would always just be like, oh, the Necronomicon was used to call down some dark god or some shit like that. He tended to stay away from a lot of that stuff, and even though his stories did have, like, some sort of supernatural element, you know, he didn't really use a lot of the tropes that you come to expect from horror or supernatural stuff like that, which is probably why his stories are so popular even today. But obviously this movie, you know, is drawing from a lot of different sources and a lot of different mythologies. And so
that's is that what you would say is the most fun aspect of this movie?
Yeah, I would say that. Like, I'm a really big mythology buff, so I really did kind of appreciate it, where you have this, you know, obviously you have Lovecraftian gods, but then, as you said, you got voodoo, you know, Lovecraft's landlord is a voodoo priestess. But then you have like unicorns, and you know, the girl, she's you know, she's worshiping who is it? Is it shit, the name's escaping me right now. But she mentions she worships like the Greek goddess of the hunt. So you have like all these different mythologies and ideologies. Yeah, a little bit of like medieval mythology mixed in there, and they're all kind of intermixed. And I really like seeing how they all kind of bounce off of each other. So that I thought was a really interesting aspect of this. Oh, okay, guys, don't speak at once. Don't.
There you go. I was going to let Chuck speak. He's like the quietest of the group.
Oh, well, you know, maybe signal that you would, that you're passing it to me.
I feel like we could do that with our little hands up on this program, I guess.
Yeah. But if you put your hand up, then I think you want to talk.
I could mute my mic and you'll be like, it's muted. He doesn't want to talk.
Yeah. He clearly doesn't want to say anything. Yeah. I thought it was, I think it's a fun little movie. It's definitely a weird one. It has weird, like Justin was saying, the effects are really good. And I kind of said the same thing to Justin when I texted him. I said, it's weird. It's like a Disney Channel original movie, except occasionally there's like Tarantino levels of gore happening just out of nowhere. I was like, other than that, it's like it kind of just has that made for TV feel, which I guess is a whole nother conversation on how TV movies are a lot different today than they were when they were originally being made back in like the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They were definitely made with a low budget cast of, you know, who can we afford to pay that's, you know, maybe just starting in their career or isn't super.
Don't talk about Fred Ward in that way.
I'm talking about him that way. You know, they got Dennis Hopper in 1994 when he maybe wasn't at the peak of his cinematic career. Like, hey, do you want to be in this cheap, HBO movie? And I'm sure he's like, if you can give me the cocaine, I'll be there.
You don't think he peaked? He was like, wasn't he like King Koopa like the same year?
That's why he probably did, because he did
the year before.
Yeah, that's what landed him the role in Witch Hunt was King Koopa. Yeah, it's definitely fun to go back and look at stuff like this and then see, you know, you watch what's considered made for TV movies on Netflix, and they, you know, like something like Bright. Even though it's not like not a great concept and wasn't maybe executed as best, but just the complete change in Bright looks like it could have been released into theaters level of quality versus this definitely has that made for TV look to it. But I think it was entertaining enough. It had some interesting stuff. I wanted more of the mythology, I guess. That's my only thing I would say, is how James is bringing up the mythology. I wanted even more of that leaked into the noir world.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because you have this, both of you have a very shit on Bright attitude. I've not seen Bright.
Bright is pretty terrible.
I won't badmouth Bright. I think there's a Bright 2 coming out. Maybe I'm making it up, but I thought they greenlit it.
I think they did, yeah.
It's interesting because at the time, it doesn't feel made for TV. It feels like it is has a way bigger budget. But compared to how network television is now, it feels like a Lifetime movie or something. Not like the vibe of a Lifetime movie, but like the sets of a Lifetime movie. So probably back in the day, it was probably kind of an exciting thing to have access to. And it wasn't done really cheaply, it doesn't seem. The effects, I think, are great. James said something about maybe things not holding up. I love practical effects because even if you can tell something's a puppet, you kind of have this like genuine reaction that works really well with most of the cast. And it doesn't age as bad as full CG, like a CG hybrid or something tends to work. But that's like why I like Gremlins and all that stuff too, because it's like they're actually interact, like the Muppets, like they're interacting with these things like they're real things, and I totally fine with that. The entire idea, like the noir world, I love the noir idea right off the bat. I guess that's how we started our Noir-vember. Noir. Then we're gonna derail that very quickly with Chuck's pick and my pick. But I thought it was goofy, and I never heard of it either. I never saw Chuck's either, so it's another month of discoveries for me. I do kind of want to watch Witch Hunt. I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it anywhere, and Chuck said it was on. He thought it was on YouTube, and then I forgot to check YouTube again. I'm like, where can I find Witch Hunt? And HB is like, stop looking for it.
Yeah, I heard Witch Hunt, there's less emphasis on like the magical aspect of things.
So yeah, it's supposed to be all about like Red Scare communism.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I read too.
Which to me, like, you know, the magical aspect and how like all these different ideologies mix and match was the most fun part of this movie for me. So I'm like, okay, so you could take away the best part of the first movie.
We'll have to see and see for ourselves. But yeah, of course they go with the Red Scare because they moved it into the 50s. They're like, the Red Scare. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's relevant then. It's relevant now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how long it'll be on HBO Max. I imagine forever, since it's HBO's thing. I don't know if it has like a partnership and someone else owns it now.
I heard.
But yeah, I go ahead.
I was gonna say, I heard that HBO, if they're exclusive content, it's always on their stream. Because this was on HBO Go before HBO Max. From what I hear, HBO archives all their exclusive stuff, so all their exclusive stuff is always on their apps.
Well, I wonder too if I liked your idea of maybe tapping into this property for a new TV show, but maybe they were afraid that somebody would watch this movie. and then we're like, no, we don't want them to hate on it right away. I don't know, because you got to think about that. What's the general audience going to think of this movie if they just tapped into it? You started appreciating, like, I appreciated the practical effects. You liked all the mythological references and stuff. Chuck loved Fred Ward.
How can you not? And Clancy Brown, man, come on!
I know, and Mr. Krabs. I wish there was more Clancy Brown. He's like he's like a character actor now. He just pops up here and there.
He's always appreciated anytime I see him.
Yeah, he was in. Did you play that Detroit game for PlayStation?
No, I didn't. I didn't play that.
Play it. That's it. He's in that too.
He was in The Mandalorian last year.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's done other things since then, but I'm just like, I think the last thing I saw him in was The Mandalorian.
Yeah, it's, I thought it was well cast. I do like Fred Ward. I don't know what happened to him.
I looked him up after. It looks like he's been acting in TV pretty steadily. So,
like a big, like a CSI or something?
Yeah, like not like... You know, this looks like he's been like a regular cast member, but looks like he's one of those guys that always pops up as like a guest star or something.
That seems to be the thing that happens. Like I try to figure out where this person went, and they've been on like 5,000 seasons of television.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess it's at least they're working, but yeah, like I looked at it, it looks like he's been tons of TV and stuff, and it says, you know, rumored it was. On IMDb, it says rumored that he was going to be in that Gremlins pilot that...
Tremors,
yeah. I'm sorry. The Tremors pilot that was shot and then never went anywhere.
I can ask the people that worked on it if he was in it. I'm sure they'll tell me.
Yeah, I guess you
would. They'll be like, we signed an NDA. We can't talk about it.
I feel like...
Well, just let me know if Fred Ward was in it.
I feel like, you know, if you're Fred Ward and they ask you to come back for Tremors, what are you going to say? No? Like...
What else? Is Kevin there? Shit, I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Oh God, Tremors, a TV show, sounds like such a great idea. Maybe it would be the worst thing ever. I don't know. But
because, like, I'm a fucking geek, everyone forgets that there is a Tremors TV show, and there, I'd say maybe 2002, 2001 on a Sci-Fi Channel that lasted a season.
I don't want to be mean to Sci-Fi, but they don't usually put out a lot of great things.
No, it wasn't good. But it was, I remember watching it. It was, but yeah, there was a Tremors TV show. Burt Gummer was obviously the main character. but yeah, it was like every week there'd be like the Graboids, but also like every week there'd be like a new, you know, weird thing that pops up in the town that they have to deal with.
It just makes me think of like Sliders, as a big fan of Sliders, yeah. But the effects in Sliders are like some of the worst effects you'll ever see. And God bless Jerry O'Connell for his acting abilities to pretend that some of this stuff's real. That's what I imagine. I am interested in that Child's Play show that's going to be on Sci-Fi, but
yeah. Sci-Fi we'll channels, their TV shows are weird because it's either like Battlestar Galactica, like, you know, one of the best sci-fi shows of all time. So they're either like that quality or they're just like shit, and there's nothing in between.
I have a friend that wrote some stuff for Sci-Fi Movies or the Sci-Fi Channel. And I'm not trying to be mean. It's going to sound a little bit mean because I don't remember what it is, but it's like Lava Spiders versus this. Like, they wrote it. They have the credit. I think they wrote like three of them. I'm like, well, I guess that's cool. At least you're making things. Yeah, you know, at least your ideas are happening.
They're getting paid to write. You know, yeah.
Right. What did you make? Lava Spiders. Didn't you fucking see it?
Shit.
Well, it's no Sharknado. You're right. It's no Sharknado, but we're trying to recapture that.
I got to get in on that, you know. I feel like
I've never watched any of them. There's like seven of them now.
I watched the first Sharknado, and it was, you know.
Perfect?
No. I feel like, you know, because some of the bad movies I've seen are so bad, like Sharknado was like, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I'm like, I've seen a lot worse bad movies.
We used to have them all the time at Hollywood Video. They always tried really hard to the Asylum movies. They tried really hard to look like something else that was in theaters currently.
Yeah, I remember that.
Transmorphers. Transmorphers was terrible. Okay, you expect Transmorphers to be terrible, but whenever I rented it, it didn't cost me anything. Don't worry. I went home and I watched it. It was out of sync by like 10 seconds, and I'm like, they really don't care. Like, they really don't care about this movie. They're like, fuck it, just put it out there. Transmorphers were like Transformers, and they were like destroying the world, and it kind of took its ideas from The Matrix. Like, they were all underground hiding from Transmorphers. So I don't even think you got to see a Transmorpher.
That sounds about right.
But they always did that. Like, there was a Sherlock Holmes that came out, and someone's like, is this the new one? I'm like, the new one with Robert Downey Jr.? No, that has, like, an octopus and, like, Abraham Lincoln on the front cover. Do you think that's the same one? And then they would get mad at me because I mocked them somewhat. Because I'm mean. But yeah, I guess my final thought is it's on HBO Max. Oh, you can check it out if you got it. It's interesting. And I kind of do agree. I feel like there's more going on for like the people that love Lovecraft. I can't speak on that. That I think you'll find something like enjoyable. It's like, what, 90 minutes long?
Yeah, it's not that long.
Sit down and enjoy yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, oh, go ahead, Chuck.
I want you to give your final thoughts at the same time, Kevin.
Yeah, you decide who's are more important later on. I want you to do it at the same time. Yeah, I don't have too much. I'm just gonna say I agree with Justin. I mean, if you already have HBO Max, it's free, it's quick, and it's pretty entertaining. It's got some. I liked all the comedic aspects to it. Like I said, even just the basic jokes of he always has the wrong card still made me laugh every time I saw it. So I think Fred Ward's, he's a good enough draw for early 90s made for TV film.
Yeah, I would, I mean, if you enjoy Lovecraft or noir, I'd say check it out. It's definitely not a perfect film. It's a lot of aspects of it haven't aged well. But, you know, I had a ton of fun when I first discovered it, you know, having not ever heard of this movie. And then check it out on HBO Max. I, you know, kind of, it was one of those things where I'm like, I can't believe I haven't heard of this before. That really enjoyed it. Had a ton of fun. And, you know, if you have HBO Max, I'd say check it out.
And we are Cinema D'Amore. I'm Justin Morgan. I'm at JJMorgan19 on Twitter. James.
I'm at James Reinhardt.
Chucko.
ChuckFin66.
We're at Cinema D'Amore on Twitter, / Cinema D'Amore on Facebook. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. We're all over the place. Please listen to us. I guess you're listening to us. Please subscribe to us and rate and review us. And let us know what you think about the Hidden Gems theme. What's your... I'd love to ask what your hidden gems are, but nobody answers my questions yet. So I'm not asking you. I take it back. But I do appreciate you listening. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks.